Hello, everyone. Welcome to JTalk Extra Time, bringing you all of the latest J2 and J3 news every week, as best we can. I'm John Steele, and joining me for a review of round three of the J2 season is Sean Carroll. Sean, how are you doing?
I'm doing very good, thank you. I've had a steam and a sauna, and I'm ready to go.
I'm very jealous of that, Sean. Luckily, our cameras are off, so there's no visual evidence to confirm this, but I'll take your word for it. Glad to hear that you're rested and refreshed. Sean, with our new kind of streamlined JTET format that has been, I think, pretty well received by listeners so far this season, we are going to talk in depth about three of the games from last weekend in J2, round three, as I mentioned. And you had the honour of making the picks for the three games that you wanted to talk about. So the first game you were interested in was Tochigi, their home game against Okayama. It finished Tochigi 0, Okayama 1. At Kanseki Stadium. It was a very, very nice free kick from Jordy Bice for the winning goal, wasn't it, in the 48th minute. I actually thought that the story of this game might be his centre-back partner, Yasutaka Yanagi, returning to Tochigi after moving to Okayama in the close season. But it was, Jordy Bice who stole all the headlines, as it were. I think things could have been better for Okayama too. Thiago Alves, he hit the post for them, didn't he, midway through the second half. But I think from what I saw in the highlights, it was a fairly comfortable Okayama win in the end, even though it was only 1-0. So that leaves Okayama on 7 points from nine from the first three rounds. I think it could have been 9 points, couldn't it, if Mitch Duke had scored his penalty against Tokushima back in round two. So they're second in the table, early doors. Tochigi have just one goal from their three matches so far, which is perhaps what we expected pre-season. What I noticed about them in this game, Sean, was I thought they were really lacking a target man or any kind of presence up front. They looked like a bit sort of like Kita Kyushu from last season in terms of being quite sort of toothless at the top end of the pitch. But what did you make of this game? Sean, Tochigi 0, Okayama 1. And any comments on the two sides in general so far?
I think maybe it doesn't stand out as one. Maybe people wonder why it was picked out. But I think, you mentioned there, obviously, it was Tochigi 0, Okayama 1. And I think Tochigi 0 is going to happen quite a bit this season. I only watched the first half of their first game against Blaublitz Akita. And then I had to switch over to something else. It was pretty grim viewing. I always wonder why there's certain teams that I think get a reputation regardless of what manager or what players they have. They get a reputation, they feel like they have to play a kind of no-nonsense, solid, don't concede long balls, get it into the mixer kind of football. And I sometimes wonder why they settle for that, because especially in J2, as we've seen, I mean, Montedio Yamagata last year, they were struggling near the bottom of the table with a manager with that kind of approach. And then they brought in Pete Klimovsky, who with pretty much the same players tried to instill a more attack-minded way of playing. And then they sort of moved up the table quite drastically. And I sometimes wonder why managers are so... I don't know why they hold back so much, because Tochigi have just been very grim. I think they've got good attacking players in the squad. Mori was really good a couple of years ago, and he seems to have faded out of the picture. They've got the guy Yachida was on loan from Kyoto, and he's stuck around. They've got decent players, but the managers either don't want to use them, or the way they use them just doesn't really give them the freedom to attack. And I think, it could be a very long year for Tochigi if they don't. I've said it often on this pod and on Big Pod, I think, but I always feel like if teams were to go for games more, you'll lose some of them, but you'll also win some of them as well. And Tochigi just seem to be one of those teams that are stuck in that rut of not wanting to take too many risks. And then because of that, they draw games or lose games rather than going in the other direction.
I think that makes sense. And to be honest, from what I've seen of Tochigi so far, I know they got that win, hard-fought win over Akita in round one, but I do get the sense perhaps... comparing them to Okayama, I do feel like we're watching two sides that probably heading in opposite directions this season. Any thoughts? Absolutely. Any thoughts on Okayama, Sean?
I was going to say Okayama are definitely. I picked them in my J-Pred as one of the teams to be in and around the playoffs. I think they've brought in some really good players. I like Takashi Kiyama as a manager in J2. I think he does a decent job of of setting teams up solidly with a kind of clear plan, but also giving the attacking players that bit of freedom, you know, allowing them to kind of express themselves. So I thought, yeah, it was a smart pickup by them, because his predecessor was it Kenji Arima last year, always just seemed like another one who was determined to play with the handbrake on at all times, for, you know, just in case, God forbid, there was any kind of excitement happened out on the pitch. And I feel like, yeah, they had quite a bit of turnover in the off season, and it wasn't really, you know, they lost their centre back pairing, both left, the central midfielders both left. But I think they did really well, yeah, to keep Mitch Duke, who I think at this level is a really solid striker. And Thiago Alves obviously has had mixed spells at various J1 clubs, but I think again at J2, as he's shown so far, he's got 3 goals so far, including that one from about 60, 70 yards out, that he again is more than capable at this level. And then, yeah, you mentioned Bison and Yanagi as a central defensive pairing. That is a solid couple of players at the back. And I mean, the midfield, Kiyama's kind of gone with a 4-3-3, whereas Okuyama were pretty much set in a 4-4-2 last year. And I mean, the central midfield, two of them are, as they love to call in Japan, rookies. Weren't really predicted ahead of the season to be going straight into the team. But alongside, is it Yosuke? I want to say Yosuke Kawai. He came in from Shimizu, I think, who's a much more experienced. I don't think he's that old, but he's got a lot of experience playing in J1 and J2. And then, Haruka Motoyama, I think from what the Meikan told us, was his preferred position was right back. But he's come in and been sort of sat right at the base of the midfield as the kind of defensive midfielder. And then Yudai Tanaka, another youngster, has come in and been charged with being the more kind of box-to-box, making stuff happen going forwards. And thus far, yeah, it seemed to work really well. That trio in the middle with Duke and Alves and, yeah, obviously, and Bison Yanagi settling the defence at the back. So they look like, obviously, it's way, way too early in the season to be talking about anyone's chances of promotion or not. But I think, yeah, they certainly look like a team that will be worth keeping an eye on for the next few months.
Yeah, top six looks eminently achievable based on just the 3 games we've had so far, doesn't it? I'd add just 2 other players quickly. Togo Umeda is a goalkeeper I really like, even though he's quite a diminutive in terms of stature. He's an excellent keeper, so I'm glad he's back at Okayama this year. And I think, is it Stefan Mork, the Australian attacker?
Yeah, I've seen Mork. I don't know how. We'll have to ask one of our Australian correspondents there. The correct pronunciation, but yeah, it's an interesting signing. But I did speak to Paul Williams very briefly of rival, but let's not quite sister podcast, but the Asian Game podcast, and he said, yeah, he's not anything particularly special. He said he's like a kind of solid but unspectacular, which sounds, maybe, you know, sounds like exactly what a lot of teams in J2 would go for. But yeah, at the minute, with the way that the trio in the middle have started, I wouldn't have thought he'll come straight into the team. But yeah, again, it's good to have another. You assume they must have scouted him quite well, so good to have another option coming in for as and when one of the youngsters might flag a little bit or yeah, fall into a patch of bad form.
Yeah, fair enough. And I think one thing I noticed watching the highlights from this match was someone from the Okayama midfield had a pot shot from about 25 yards. And that was the first time I thought of Satoki Uejo this season. So they haven't actually missed him as much as I thought they would. So that's probably testament to how well they've started the season as well. Sean, I'll move you on if that's okay. Another team that have had a quietly impressive start is Iwate, newly promoted into J2 this season, of course. At the weekend, they won 2-1 away at FC Ryukyu. And I think a come-from-behind 2-1 away win was the kind of a score of the round, wasn't it? There weren't any home wins in any of the 11 games. And quite a few of the away wins that came up were come-from-behind 2-1 victories. In this game, Iwate actually had to come back from a horrible start when they went behind in the fourth minute. I think it was Yuki Kusano's low cross into the box, which somehow found Katsuya Nakano completely free around the penalty spot, and he swept home for 1-0 Ryukyu. I think we need to give Iwate some credit, though. They didn't panic, and they were able to play their way back into contention. Really, it was a busy afternoon for their right-sided defender Tsuyoshi Miechi. He managed to blaze over the crossbar from about 2 yards in the first half, which is a pretty horrendous miss, and then he headed the ball against the crossbar in the second. When the equaliser from Iwate did come, it was an absolute thunderbolt. It was a really poor clearance from Yu Tomidokoro to the edge of the Ryukyu penalty area, and that was slammed in, as they say, with interest, Sean, by Hayata Komatsu. That was in the 73rd minute for 1-1. Ryukyu sub Takuma Abe hit the crossbar with a very acrobatic effort, which I had to watch a couple of times to work out how he'd actually managed it. But it hit the crossbar and went away. And then Iwata's winner was an absolutely fantastic shot from about 25 yards from their debutant Daisuke Fukagawa. That came in the 83rd minute. I've just written wowzers in my notes, Sean. That was an absolutely brilliant strike. So it finished Ryukyu 1, Iwate 2. Just 1 point from the first three games for Ryukyu. I wonder if it's too early to worry on their account. Iwate, Sean, they're riding high in fourth. Obviously, all of their games so far have been away from home due to the weather up in Tohoku, but they've managed 2 wins from those three matches. I'm starting to think they might be going to do an Akita, I suppose, like last year, and be suddenly comfortable in mid-table. But how about this game? Sean, Ryukyu 1, Iwate 2.
I think the main reason I picked the game out was for Ryukyu's start has been very poor. We touched upon it ahead of the season, and other guests on the pod too, we were talking about, you know, whether they would do as well as last year, and I think everyone kind of agreed that they didn't really look in anywhere near as good shape coming into this season, and they haven't started well at all. I mean, there's been Okazaki was back in the centre of defence in this game, but he missed the first couple of games. Uesato is a player I like a lot, usually is so key in the middle of the park, hasn't started any yet. And you mentioned Abe there, came off the bench, but he hasn't started yet either. So I don't know if there's still a bit of a hangover. I know their pre-season preparations were affected quite a lot by Omicron. I think they weren't able to train until maybe the start of February. So maybe they're just struggling to get up to speed, and some of those more senior players are not quite fully fit yet. So they've had to play some younger players in the early matches, which hasn't helped them. I think at the back, Nakagawa, who came in from Jubilo, has looked... Lee Yongjik has the odd mistake in him. But Nakagawa hasn't looked particularly solid. There was another youngster, Omori, was playing as well in the first couple of games. Fukumura, who's come in from Verdi as a left back, he's been playing defensive midfield the first couple of games. So I don't know if that's a long-term plan, if that's why he left Verdi, because he was playing regularly at Verdi. So whether he prefers himself, sees himself as a central midfielder, and that's why he made the move, or whether it's just he's filling in while Uesato gets up to fitness, I don't know. But Ryukyu have certainly looked a shadow of the team that started last year so well. With Iwate, I mean, it's always tricky to get much of a gauge. I think teams that after they get promotion, they still have a little bit of that adrenaline, a little bit of the confidence coursing through them from having gone up at the start of the season, and they're really focused on each game, whether they can keep going. I mean, it was both of their goals in this game were terrific strikes. As you said, the first one was a gift in a sense. It was still a terrific hit, but it was terrible clearance from the edge of the box by Tomidokoro that gave Komatsu the chance. And then an 87th minute winner from a debutant rookie centre back. I mean, as wonderful as they are to watch, I don't think teams can be too dependent on those kind of goals. So it's a solid start for them. And as you mentioned, they haven't played at home yet. So they would have taken this start, I think, ahead of the season. But I still think we'll get a clearer picture as to how good or bad the team they are in maybe another month or two.
Yeah, I think that's a fair comment. It's important to point out that Ryukyu didn't have the ideal sort of preparation as you mentioned, for the start of the for the start of the season. I mean, we something that I talked about, I think, with James in earlier pods, is quite a few teams sort of coming into the season looking undercooked, as it were. And I think Ryukyu, we can definitely put in that category at the moment. But yeah, I do think we're not quite at panic stations, are we, after three rounds? But I do think they will probably not be, well, they obviously won't be happy with the results they've had so far. But I think, yeah, performance-wise, still some work to do. For Iwate, yeah, it's interesting because I don't remember them last year in J3. They didn't score that many sort of rasping goals from outside the box. It kind of, that kind of ties in with what you were saying about it's not something that can be relied upon. But I do remember the goal, that the winner that they scored away at Jeff back on the opening day was another really good finish. It was inside the box, but it was kind of like a sort of cushion volley. From a free kick. So I think it was Miichi, yeah. So yeah, they do have there is quality, there is some quality in that team that perhaps it was almost hidden away in J3.
Yeah. Well, they signed Atsutaka Nakamura as well, who's been injured a lot for about the last, well, it seems like about the last 5 or 10 years. But yeah, if he's a technical, attack minded player, so it's clear that it gets confusing. The manager is called Akita, but they're not Akita. But yeah, the manager Akita obviously is, will know him from Akita used to play for Kashima, and I think he was kind of involved a bit behind the scenes at Kashima too. So he probably would have seen him up close there. So yeah, there's stuff to work with. They've also got a fantastic badge, which is always good to see. And even the away kit, I know their home kit is white, but it was nice to see that kind of, I don't know, is it peppermint or spearmint? I never know which one is which. Let's go spearmint. But that away kit was very pleasing on the eye. So yeah.
Yeah, I think we have to give a shout out to non-white away kits whenever we see them, don't we? That's they're all too rare. So yeah, I think with Iwate, you're totally right to say it's way too early to make any sweeping statements. But I think what we can say is the fact that they've had two away wins already means they are not going to be a pushover. And they're not a dead cert to be in one of the two relegation places.
No, but then we do have to add the asterisk that the two away wins were against a Ryukyu who are, yeah, probably not up to speed yet, and also Jeff, who last time I checked are Jeff.
Jeff brackets Jeff. Yeah, good points. Well, Sean, how about another come from behind 2-1 away win to round off our chat about match day three? This time it was in cold and windy conditions in Kanazawa. The game finished Kanazawa 1, Machida 2. Kanazawa had a perfect start thanks to a fine strike from Masamichi Hayashi. Kanazawa just seemed to run out of steam in this game, though, Sean. Most of the second half seemed to belong to Machida, from what I saw. They eventually equalised in the 71st minute when Taiki Hirato, the captain, swept in a low cross from Hijiri Onaga, I think, out on the left. And despite some good saves from Yuto Shirai in the Kanazawa goal, Machida won the game late on when two of their substitutes combined. Shusuke Ota sent Chongteze clean through with a clever flick, and he was able to go around Shirai and tuck the ball into the net for 2-1. That's how it finished. Machida in third place in the sort of embryonic league table. Sean, two wins and a draw from the three games so far. I don't think they've really been overly impressive yet, though. That's my assessment. Kanazawa had an okay start, didn't they? But at this point, they're still looking for a first win of the season. They've had two draws, and then this was their first defeat. So what about this game and Machida and Kanazawa in general?
I think Kanazawa were pretty much what we've come to expect from Kanazawa. Every year, they kind of refresh a little bit because a couple of players will stand out and then they'll move on, or they'll have players that come in on loan and then go back to their parent club. So there's always a reasonable amount of turnover, and manager there, Yanagishita, tends to prefer sticking with pretty much the same 11 players. He likes to just kind of settle on his preferred lineup and give them a few games. So they've got a couple of, I keep confusing which one is which, they've got a couple of Matsumotos came in. And one is playing at centre back, and one is playing in central midfield, which are obviously sort of key positions for any team. So they're having to settle into the team. Kind of got a new look strike force with I think Shion Niwa is injured, so Hayashi, who came in from Montedio, and Yohei Toyoda, the veteran, who I think he's from Ishikawa, I think, although I might have just made that up. I didn't make it up. Excellent. So yeah, there's a few new faces there, and I think it will just take a little bit of time to click. They sort of really ran out of steam at the end of last season, so perhaps they needed to freshen up a bit. But yeah, they didn't look like they're quite ready yet. And Machida, yeah, I agree, they haven't had a sort of sensational start, but I think the fact that they've still managed to take 7 points from those games will be very pleasing for Ranko Popovic, because I think last year Machida were they did make it into what would have been the playoff places in the end, but I think there were too many games that they should have taken more from that they ultimately just kind of ran out of steam a bit. I think one thing that will be interesting to keep an eye on this year is that they seem to have kind of strengthened the squad a bit. Last year they pretty much had a best 11, and if anyone got injured, they were suddenly a bit stretched. And I know a couple of them arrived a bit late, but they brought in Shinya Suganuma from Gamba, the centre back, and obviously Vinicius Araujo, who was at Montedio last year, but I think he was back in Brazil, so they had a bit of a wait getting him back into the country. They're both obviously in training now, but not up to match fitness. But I think, yeah, taking 7 points from three not especially sensational games will is a solid start for them. And yeah, with the likes of Kazuma Yamaguchi coming in as well, Onaga, you mentioned, got the assist for one of the goals. He's a kind of a solid option to have at either fullback position too. So they've got a little bit more depth now. And yeah, last year Dudu and Tshongtese really didn't score as many goals as anybody expected. So if they can contribute with a handful or so of, especially if they're important goals like Tese's was that decides a game in their favour over the course of the season, yeah, if they can match last year, then they'll be delighted. But with the squad they've got now, I think they have the potential, yeah, to maybe go in and do a little bit better, especially with the fact that the relegated teams, Yokohama FC aside, have started a bit slowly. VAR and Nagasaki as well have started a bit slower than people expected. So no one is really sort of taking charge of the league at the moment. So yeah, I think Machida will quietly be quite happy to be sneaking under the radar.
Yeah, I think perhaps Machida have got the sort of Okayama potential to kind of push themselves into that top six conversation early on, haven't they? Like you mentioned, a few of the newly relegated teams and Nagasaki and Kofu not exactly tearing it up at this point. So I think if you can get into that kind of top six, collect points in advance, if by around Golden Week or summertime you're up there, you have a good chance of staying there for the duration, don't you? So yeah, we'll wait and see. I think on Machida, something I talked about in sort of season preview pods was I thought their central defence or defence in general might be a bit wobbly. They might be a bit short there, but I think they had two consecutive clean sheets, didn't they, in the home games to start the season, and they let in a goal this weekend, but it was kind of a it was just a sort of a ricochet, like a loose ball that ended up falling for Hayashi, and he finished well. So I don't think they'll be too disappointed to have only let in one goal in the first three games, and it's a
Well,
goal like that is okay.
they brought in William Popp as well, who was very good at Okayama a couple of years ago. Then he went, I don't know if he went back to Oita or if he transferred to Oita, but he didn't really get enough chances there. So I think, yeah, Fukui is a decent keeper, but not without errors from time to time. So yeah, with having Pop as well, like that little bit of strength there. And yeah, they brought in, I think, Jun Okano as a centre back from Jeff, and as I said, Suganuma. So they've got options to come in at centre back. Last year they had Hiroki Mizumoto, like a one of or sort of beyond a veteran. Won the league with Hiroshima probably about 10 years ago, and he's moved on. So I think, yeah, they've strengthened a little bit there. But yeah, I think the Fukatsu obviously is pushing 40, and Takahashi is guaranteed to get a red card every month or two. So yeah, I think they'll need that strength in depth. But yeah, I think things look reasonably promising for them.
Fair enough. I'm a big fan of Jun Okano. I'm not sure if bringing in a centre back from Jeff United ever strengthens a playoff chasing J2 side, but I'll let you off with that one, Sean. I think he is a good player, and outside of the Jeff sort of tentacles of doom, I'm sure he'll play well and do a good job. On Kanazawa, I still think they're one of those teams where it's definitely too early to call how their season is going to go. I think James was James Taylor was very enthused by the first two rounds, where I think they kept clean sheets, which I don't think they didn't keep consecutive clean sheets in the whole of last season, I don't think. Right. So to have started this season with back-to-back shutouts, as the Americans would no doubt say, is good news.
Talking of shutouts, did you see the... I think it was deleted quite quickly, but Almir Adija in one of their games, I think it was the Niigata game, they tweeted at halftime one of those, you know, they send out those kind of, it's not a GIF, but it's just like a picture, an image of Minami kind of celebrating. And it said, you know, clean sheet, you know, great save or great game or something. And I remember looking at it thinking, it's only half time. Do they do that now for half time as well?
Sean, there's, where Omiya concerns, nothing like expectation management, you know?
Well, yeah, that was, and then I think they were 2-0 up and then conceded twice in the second half. So I think, yeah, someone, I don't know. I mean, Omiya had such a terrible year last year. Maybe they were just someone in the social media team was just so excited that the referee blew the whistle when they were winning that he probably got a bit ahead of himself.
Yeah, I suppose there's probably a dystopian future where, like, if it, every minute without conceding a goal, there's a tweet to go with it. Perhaps we're heading there.
And a commemorative t-shirt.
Yes, perhaps heading there sooner than we think. But yeah, James was saying that this game felt a bit more like Kanazawa from last season, of like manoeuvring themselves into a position to take points, but then sort of. Perhaps it's a bit harsh to say they threw them away, but kind of wasting that opportunity, wasting the good work that they'd done, yeah, you know, in the first 70 minutes of the game. So hopefully the real Kanazawa will stand up soon, and we can put these question marks to bed. But I think, yeah, the first two games, they look more solid than last year.
Well, they have a good chance of doing that in their next game, because I believe they're playing the Tentacles of Doom in Kanazawa. So yeah.
What could possibly go wrong? And I think as well, yeah, you mentioned Shion Niwa being out injured for a couple of months. I think it's Dai Tsukamoto's out injured as well. So I think they have a couple of early season injuries to contend with. But I think, obviously at home, you can't be judged properly until you've had a home game against Jeff in J2. That's exactly. That's fair enough. Sean, thanks for all the analysis, the input, really good stuff. Within decent haste, if it's okay with you, we'll take a quick break here. For the listeners, you're going to hear me round up the rest of the round three action in a moment. But don't turn off. After that, please come back, because Sean and I are going to run through the games coming up in round four this weekend in a quick preview. So stay tuned. Hi again, everyone. John Steele here with a quick wrap-up of the rest of the round three action from J2 over the weekend. As mentioned with Sean, it was a great weekend for the away sides. From the 11 fixtures, there were no home wins at all in round three. It was also a good weekend to concede the first goal, as no fewer than three visiting teams produced comebacks to win 2-1. First of all, Yokohama FC made it three wins out of three by winning 2-1 at Oita. Oita took the lead early on when Yokohama gave the ball away in their own final third, and Yamato Machida crossed for Seigo Kobayashi to head in. That was in the 13th minute, but it was 1-1 just 9 minutes later when Kohei Tezuka's free kick wasn't dealt with at all by the Oita defence, and Sho Ito headed the ball in from virtually on the goal line. There was a really good tempo to the game after that, with some good saves from both goalkeepers, until the decisive goal in the 78th minute. Ryoya Yamashita scored a beautiful curler for Yokohama in off the underside of the bar, and this was made even more special by the fact that he'd actually lost his right boot in the build-up to the goal, so he ended up scoring the winner in his stockinged foot. I think quite a few sports newspapers were calling him sort of a Yokohama Cinderella. Not sure who the Cinderella of the pod is, but we can leave that for another time. There was still time in this game late on for an excellent Sven Brodersen save to deny Oita a point, and it finished Oita 1, Yokohama FC 2. Kumamoto got their first win back in J2, coming from 1-0 down to win 2-1 away at Omiya. Just 30 minutes gone in this game when Atsushi Kawata bamboozled Kumamoto keeper Yuya Sato with a deflected shot from the edge of the box for 1-0 Omiya. But as they've done in every game so far this season, Omiya ended up dropping points, this time in the 73rd minute. Some pretty horrible zonal defending from a corner and a bad decision from Omiya keeper Tomoki Ueda led to the ball bouncing into the net off Kumamoto's defender Masahiro Sugata for 1-1. And then with just 4 minutes left, Shohei Aihara headed in a cross from Keisuke Tanabe to win it for the visitors. So it finished, yes, Omiya 1, Kumamoto 2. Omiya just 1 point from their three games so far. Kumamoto have 4. Another team coming from behind to win away from home were Kofu, 2-1 at a pretty lukewarm Viva in Nagasaki. Nagasaki were ahead early on thanks to Ken Tokara's first goal of the season when he converted a low cross from Cristiano at close range. But it was 1-1 just before half-time with Motoki Hasegawa, a player who started the season brilliantly, by the way, toe-poking the ball past Masaya Tomisawa from the edge of the penalty area. And I should mention there was some excellent work from Nagi Matsumoto to set up the shooting chance as well. So 1-1 at half-time. Kofu's winner was a really well-worked corner routine midway through the second half, with Hasegawa's cross generating a scramble on the Nagasaki goal line. Eventually, rookie striker Riku Iijima bundled the ball over the line for a Kofu winner. So yes, Nagasaki 1, Kofu 2, the final score. Kofu's first win of the season. Nagasaki yet to get a victory in 2022. And another team picking up their first win, and indeed points of the season, were Blaublitz Akita, who won 1-0 away at Mito with a goal from Hayate Take. Some excellent Akita defending kept Mito out in the first half. Brilliant blocks, a superb sliding tackle, and then a great save from Yudai Tanaka kept out Kosuke Kinoshita when the Akita backline was breached. Akita's goal was a well-worked free-kick routine in the 73rd minute. Now Eguchi's ball was sent across the penalty area by Ryota Nakamura for Take to convert around the six-yard box. So yes, it finished Mito 0, Akita 1. I think we can say that was an absolutely perfect away performance from Akita, and they'll be highly delighted to get the 3 points to take back to Tohoku. There were plenty of draws on the round three slate as well. Sendai's home game with Gunma, as well as Jeff Chiba's home game with Yamagata, both finished 0-0. As Sean mentioned, a very decent start to the season from Gunma, unbeaten so far and sitting in 8th place in the early league table. Yamaguchi picked up a handy point on the road at Niigata in a game that finished 1-1. Niigata had most of the chances in this game, but it was the visitors who went in front just before the hour when Shuhei Otsuki swept in a low cross from Takaya Numata. The home side responded pretty well, and Shunsuke Mito came close to an equaliser, but his shot was deflected onto the outside of the post. Niigata did restore parity 13 minutes from full time. On a fast counter-attack, Ryotaro Ito sent Shion Honma clean through, and he confidently beat Kentaro Seki in the Yamaguchi goal. So it finished Niigata 1, Yamaguchi 1. Yamaguchi stay unbeaten this season, and they're in the dizzying heights of 6th place in the early league table with 1 win and 2 draws, while Niigata have drawn all 3 of their matches so far in 2022. Another game that finished 1-1 was the match between Tokushima and Tokyo Verdy. Tokushima took the lead in the 32nd minute here when Kohei Uchida met Seiya Fujita's corner with a towering header. But Verdy were level just 4 minutes later, and it was a beautiful equaliser, a delicate chip from a very tight angle from a young defender Daiki Fukuzawa. Tokushima did their best to restore their lead after that. Naoto Arai hit the crossbar with a curling effort at the end of the first half, and then a combination of good goalkeeping from Verdy's Toru Takagiwa and some organised defending kept the home side at bay. Eventually, Tokushima finished with 10 men. This is after Brazilian defender Kaka was shown a straight red card for bringing down Ryoga Sato when cleaned through. The offence was just outside the penalty area though, and the resulting free kick was well saved by home goalkeeper Toru Hasegawa. Verdy unbeaten so far, 5th in the league table, while Tokushima, like Niigata, have drawn all 3 games so far. And as a bonus, we can also round up the leftover game from round 1. It was postponed from the opening day due to COVID-19 concerns at Oita, but it was finally played on Wednesday night, the 9th of March. And Oita hosted Mito, and the game finished 1-1. Oita nearly took the lead in just the second minute in this one when Hiroto Goya's header took a deflection off Jefferson Tabinas and hit the top of the Mito crossbar. but it was Mito who took the lead in the 7th minute when Koichi Murata pounced on a loose ball just inside the Oita half, dribbled the ball to the edge of the penalty area, and then sent a low shot in off the post for 1-0, a fine goal to give Mito the lead. But Oita equalised through Goya in the 36th minute. He ran off the back of Jefferson Tabinas, who'd switched off a little bit, and then he beat Mito's goalkeeper Shu Mogi to the ball in a foot race out wide on the left, and then he coolly chipped the ball over the retreating Mogi and into the net from a tight angle. Really, really good finish from him. Oita should have been 2-1 up on the hour, but Arata Watanabe blazed the ball over from a close range. And then as the game was finishing, there was a nasty-looking head injury for Oita's Keisuke Saka. He fell into the legs of a Mito player at full speed. It was accidental and it was innocuous, but it looked very painful. He hit his head. He seemed to be kind of unconscious, laid out cold momentarily. After being stretchered off, he was conscious. He was sitting up and seemed okay, but was immediately substituted. So, hopefully he's fine. I couldn't find an update on his condition just at the time of recording, but I think the fact that he was sitting up and he was conscious was a good sign. So, hope he's back playing again soon. But yes, the game finished at Oita 1, Mito 1. Oita with just 2 points from their first three games of the season now, but Mito were even worse off. They have just 1 point from the 9 available so far. Okay, I think that's all for the round 3 and bonus round 1 wrap-up, so please stay tuned. You're going to hear me and Sean together again, and we're previewing the round 4 fixtures coming up this weekend, so please stay tuned. Extra time. Welcome back, everyone. John Steele here again with round 3 fully covered. Sean Carroll's back with me. We're going to take a look at the round 4 games coming up this weekend. So, Sean, pleasingly, the games are split 50-50 across Saturday, March the 12th, and Sunday, March the 13th. So, on Saturday, we have Sendai hosting Iwate in something of a Tohoku derby. Kofu host Yamagata. We also have Yamaguchi against Ryukyu. Tokushima hosting Kumamoto, and then a Kyushu derby, Nagasaki versus Oita. Do you have a highlight for us? Is there a game that you like the look of in the Saturday slate?
There's quite a few. Looking at the fixtures here, I think Sendai against Iwate obviously is it count as a Tohoku derby? I guess it does. I'm always hesitant to use these terms because people from the region or with better knowledge of the region, but it looks like it might be a classed as a Tohoku derby. And obviously Iwate, who we said have started the season reasonably well, and Sendai haven't started particularly well, having dropped down from J1. So, you know, teams that were in J1 and J3 respectively last year, that looks like it could be a good one. Kofu against Montedio as well. Neither of these have had especially solid starts, and they would have been looking at this year as being if not automatic promotion playoff, so that is also a one that, you know, they're both wanting to get a win from that. And then Nagasaki Oita as well is another one. I mean, Oita are playing Mito in midweek, so probably by the time this is out people will know the result from that, but having lost at home to Yokohama FC, and obviously the game against Mito was delayed from the first round, and Nagasaki have had a bit of a slow start too. So if I think those last two games I mentioned, whoever gets the win in those matches will be feeling a lot more positive. But if they were to lose it, or if it ends as a draw, I think the teams will be looking at suddenly your sort of opportunities missed, and already kind of, you know, a little bit of a, again, it's far too early to really look at the table, but a little bit of a gap opening up, and maybe that will start to have an effect on morale a little bit.
Yeah, interesting stuff. Yes, and I haven't recorded the listeners have already heard my roundup of round 3, but I will add in a comment on that Oita game against Mito from midweek. So hopefully the listeners will be caught up with that as well. But yeah, good to mention that. And Oita, of course, got this hellish schedule in March, right? Sean, they're playing every midweek, right, with the Levan Cup. So they've got games.
Everywhere. Mean, they're doing what all teams do with the Levan and playing the reserves in the midweek. So although there's the logistic hassle of it, and I guess, you know, the manager and the support staff, whatever, are traveling around, and it obviously impacts upon on time in training and whatnot. I think, yeah, in terms of tiredness, I don't think that there should be too much of an impact. I mean, Oita as well, I've got an absolutely huge squad. So yeah, I don't think it should, they can't really use it as much of an excuse as much as they might like to. But yeah, I'm sure they'll be quite happy to lose a couple more Levan Cup games and get that.
We'll get that translated and put in the dressing room, or the home dressing room at the division. No, Sean, no excuses. Yeah, another good J League slogan, yeah. I feel. Yeah. Okay, Sean, how about the games on Sunday then, March the 13th? The other six games from round four are on the slate, aren't they? We have Akita hosting Niigata, Tochi against Omiya. Oof, I winced inwardly and outwardly at that one. Gunma against Tokyo Verdy, Machida hosting Okayama, I think. Yokohama FC taking on Mito. And yes, the aforementioned Kanazawa against Jeff Chiba. Where should we be looking, Sean, on Sunday?
I'm very tempted actually to go to Machida against Okayama. We covered both of their games earlier on in the pod from last weekend. They're both unbeaten so far. They're both sort of upwardly mobile or hoping to be upwardly mobile this season. So I think, yeah, that game looks like it could be a good one. So it's probably nailed on now to be a tense 0-0 draw. But yeah, that one definitely stands out. And maybe Gunma against Verdy even. I think Gunma have started a lot better than certainly I expected under Tsuyoshi Otsuki, who didn't have the best of times when he was in charge of Reds. But yeah, it's a kind of pretty much a no-nonsense setup. But yeah, they've done reasonably well so far. I think they're unbeaten, right? Did they win one, draw two? Where are they? Yeah, I'm scrolling way too far down. They're eighth. Yeah, one win and two draws so far. And they have not... Oh, they haven't conceded yet. and yeah, Verdy have obviously been... they got a few goals against Tochigi and have started reasonably well. They're up in fifth. So yeah, maybe that one could... yeah, again, it's very early in the season, but could give another indication as to how those two teams are looking set for this year.
Yeah, fair enough. Yes, I think, yeah, Yokohama FC against Mito as well. Obviously, if Yokohama FC win that one, which is not beyond the realms of possibility, that'd be four straight wins to start the campaign, which would put them in pole position, I suppose, at the top. And then Akita against Niigata. I mean, Niigata have not really clicked yet, have they,
no.
This season? You wonder if Akita could grind out a 1-0 home win there. That could put Niigata's new manager under some early pressure.
That could be Blaublitz's slogan, couldn't it? Grind out. Yeah, they are. They can sometimes be a bit difficult to watch, which is a shame because again, I do like a few of their players, but they just seem to be held on a leash and yeah, not really allowed to express themselves, which is.
I thought it was very telling, Sean, in part one when you said you'd watch the first half of Tochigi against Akita in round one, but you said at half time you had to turn it off, but you didn't explain why, so that listeners just left to assume that you just couldn't face, like you weren't busy, but you just couldn't face.
Well, no, partly it's because it was such a dire game with two teams just sort of lumping the ball up the other end of the pitch and hoping something would happen. But it was also, this is a problem that I get every weekend where this with so many games kicking off at around about the same time, I never know which one to watch. And then I pick one and go, right, I'm just going to watch this and then I'll catch the highlights of the others. But then I'll scroll through Twitter and I'll see somebody will say something happened in this game and I'll think, oh, I'll get a bit of that. And then I switch over and start. And then you don't really see anything. You don't actually sort of, you don't feel like you've watched any of the games properly. But yeah, that was Tochigi against Akita. I think, yeah, it was a really grim first half of quite depressing football. So, I ended up having to look elsewhere for my fix.
Harsh but fair, yeah. That kind of flicking between games needs this name, like DAZN syndrome, isn't it? Or DAZN-itis, yeah. and I just really quick before I let you go, Sean, Tochigi Omiya. I do sense, you know, Omiya have been in this situation already in pretty much every game where they've either been winning or had a point and then ended up losing. Mm. Or drawing. I wonder if they don't get anything from this game at Tochigi, or if they do go in front and then end up, you know, not winning somehow or even losing. I don't know what the expectations are at Omiya this season, to be honest. But I wonder if the manager might have some early pressure.
Yeah, they've got a very good squad. They've brought in some good good midfield players. I like Ohashi that was at Kanazawa last year. Miyuki's coming from Renault for Yamaguchi. Shibayama, the young player, I like. He's starting to play a bit more. Okunuki seems to be fit again now. Like, they've brought in some good players. But I just don't particularly think Shimoda is a very... Shimoda? It is, isn't it, the manager? I don't think he's a particularly good manager. I don't think he's able to organise a team. I mean, there's... He likes to kind of play an attacking style of football, so his teams are always fun to watch. But I don't feel like he's really able to set the team up in an organised way. Their games always seem to be so hectic. It was the same at Renault. I remember seeing a stat when he was there and they finished bottom in the league in the year when there was no relegation. And they conceded an inordinate amount of goals late on in games. They just don't seem to be able to control the flow of things. And I think with Omiya, they came back against Yokohama, I think, in the first game and then lost. And then, against Niigata, they were ahead and then got pulled back. And again, against Rawasa as well. So I think, I don't think he's... although his teams are kind of fun to watch, I don't know if he's a particularly effective manager. So I'm not sure. Now that I've said that, I remember writing off Jubilo fairly early on last season and then they stormed through. So I'm sure now... Omiya fans everywhere can rest assured that they will now win the league at a canter this year.
Fair enough. Yeah, I think Omiya are a funny one because I think they could have had 9 points from the first three games. Mm. I think instead they've got one. So I just wonder what the analysis is going to be if after round four we're saying, well, they could have had 12, but they've got one. Yeah. How long is it? You know, how long does a sort of run of bad luck last before it starts to look like something deeper? But it's early days, so I don't think anybody will be panicking just yet. Sean, thanks for all of your inputs, much appreciated. Thanks for taking time out of the sauna to offer your J2 expert knowledge.
Hey, I'd left the sauna.
Yeah, I know. I just don't believe you. That's the thing. Yeah. No, seriously, Sean. Hope to have you back on soon for some more. More banter and J2 chat. So thanks for that. And yes, for the listeners, please stay tuned because in a moment, Magic Mike Innes has got a quick preview of the upcoming big J3 kickoff. J3 gets underway this weekend as well on Saturday the 12th. And he's got a short preview of the round one J3 fixtures coming up. So please stay tuned for that in a moment. And as always, thanks for listening and downloading the pod. And if you support JTalk or JTET on Patreon, we appreciate that a lot. As well, but that's all from Sean and I, and please stay tuned. Mike has got a J3 round one preview coming up right now.
Hello everyone and welcome back to JTalk Short Corner, the mini pod that keeps you up to date with events in J3 of the J League. I'm your host Mike Innes, and in this extra mini episode, I'll be previewing games coming up in round one of the 2022 J3 season. The new campaign begins with three fixtures on Saturday the 12th of March and the other six round one matches on Sunday the 13th. On Saturday, there's YSCC Yokohama against many people's favourites for promotion, FC Gifu. Exciting young striker Charles Nduka in the closed season left YSCC to join the Gifu Galacticos. Kenji Nakada moved from the coaching staff at Gifu to take over at YSCC. Another fancied side, Takuya Takagi's SC Sagamihara, host expected strugglers Azul Claro Numazu. And fingers crossed, there's the prospect of goals as Fujieda MyFC take on Gainare Tottori, which may pitch Fujieda's dynamic new forward Tomoyuki Doi against Tottori starlet Yuya Taguchi. Then on Sunday, many eyes will be on the Pikara Stadium Takamatsu as the big club that came down from J2, Matsumoto Yamaga, make their J3 bow at Kamatamari Sanuki. Another contender for game of the round is relegated but rebuilt Ehime FC, the mighty Mikans, at home to much-fancied Katare Toyama. J-League newcomers Iwaki FC play their first ever J3 match, but they make their longest trip of the year to do so, heading all the way to southern Kyushu to take on Kagoshima United. There's also a long trip down south for Vanrare Hachinohe, who go to Tegevajaro Miyazaki two of the most changed lineups in the division there, with Hachinohe's Ryo Watanabe having made a surprise move from Miyazaki during the winter. Relegated Giravants Kitakyushu staged their first J3 game since 2019 as Yuki Stauff takes his AC Nagano Paseiro side to the Mikuni World Stadium. And it's FC Imabari against Fukushima United, a meeting of ex-Jubilo Iwata legends Yuichi Komano, still in the playing squad at Imabari. Toshihiro Hattori takes charge of Fukushima for the first time. So as we head into the new season, don't forget there's a trio of full-length J3 preview pods being rolled out this week, in which Jovial John Steele and I take a detailed look at the prospects of each club, your companion piece for what promises to be an exciting year of J-League third tier watching, and I very much hope you'll enjoy the season ahead with J-Talk Short Corner. But with all the week's business seen to then, that's it for this mini-pod. All that remains is for me to say thanks for listening, enjoy your football, and see you next time. Bye for now.